How are you this morning? Good to see you here. It's supposed to be a nice day today. It's supposed to warm up some, so should be good. I think we're coming to the end of the winter here and should be rounding the corner. Things are going to start greening up here pretty soon. We're going to be looking, as you recall, we looked at the first couple of the Ten Commandments last week, and we're going to be wrapping up the Ten Commandments here this morning. We're going to be in Exodus chapter 20, of course. We're going to start at verse 8, and we're going to take it down to verse 17. And look at basically the second half of the Ten Commandments. I'll read our passage here this morning, and I'll have a word of prayer. It says, starting at verse 8, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is in thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the earth, which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not cover thy neighbor's wife. Nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's." Let's have a word of prayer. Lord, again, we thank you for this day. We thank you for the time of prayer that we had downstairs. We thank you for the songs that we've been able to share to give you some of the praise and honor that's worthy your name. Great are you, Lord, as we just finished singing. It's an honor to serve you. We thank you for these basic rules that you've given to us, the terms of your covenant. We ask that you'll guide us through them, show what you'd have for us. It's in your name I pray. Amen. So today we're kind of turning a corner in our look at the Ten Commandments. As we see that we can honor, it's the first commandment that we look at here today is remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. And in that, we can see that we can honor the name of God by the way that we understand time. By the way that we understand time can honor God. Now, the idea of a seven-day week is nothing new to the ancient Middle East. I mean, most Middle Eastern cultures had a seven-day week at this time already. They pretty much just divided the 28-day lunar month into quarters. You divide 28 days into quarters, you've got seven-day week, right? It's no real science. Well, it's science to it, but it's nothing mystical. What is different here, what is different is the idea of taking one day out of those seven and setting it aside to rest and to remember the Lord. The seventh day is to be a day of rest, according to God. And it has nothing to do with the phases of the moon. The idea that there's a seven-day week may have something to do with the phases of the moon, but the fact that you set one aside, the seventh day, has nothing to do with the moon. The significance of this is to further demonstrate that God is outside nature and outside time. Time belongs to God. He is not subject to it. Nature belongs to God. He is not subject to it. By taking one day out of seven to rest, God is teaching his people that their provision does not come as a result of their own efforts. You don't have to work that seventh day to provide for yourself and for your family. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of you. That's really what God's saying in this. This rule applies to everyone in the household, as well as everyone they hired. Did you see that? Your manservant, your maidservant, they all get a day off. You're taking a day off. Your servants are taking a day off. Your cat, your dog, everybody's taking a day off on that day. It applies to everyone. For one day in every week, they were to stop trying to supply for your own needs. Just stop it. For one day in seven, they are to remember the one who really supplies their needs. That's the thrust of the Sabbath day. One day in seven is dedicated to the Lord, to remind us of our Creator and our Sustainer. He even emphasizes the idea that He is the Creator by saying, "For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth and the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day." Just take that seventh day and remember who God is in relation to you. And by following this cycle of rest and work, we're following the pattern that the Creator established. He established that. He worked 6 days and took one off. Did he do that because he needed a rest?
No.
No, that's right. Thank you, Bruce. No, God did not need a rest. He took that day off to establish a pattern for you and I. So to simply take that as a day of rest, though, like a lot of people do in this world today, and to not remember the Creator, which is the real thrust, is to miss the point of the Sabbath. The Sabbath is an holy day. It's different than all the others, and it is to be dedicated to God. It's not a day to sit around doing nothing. It's a day to remember your Creator and your relationship to Him. Then we come to the last six of the Ten Commandments, and they bang right through them real fast. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery, honor thy father and mother. They boom, 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 boom. They're real pithy, real easy. They're kind of surprising in how different they are from the first commandments. If this is a covenant with God, and that we've established that last week, this is a covenant between God and His people, then why focus on our fellow men for the last six commandments? Why are these commandments related to our fellow man? Well, remember what I said at the outset of our look at the law. God is trying to demonstrate some truths about His character. That's what we're doing here. We're establishing some truths about God's character. God is an ethical person. And His ethics are grounded in His self-sacrificing love. That's the whole basis to all of God's ethical system, is that He is self-sacrificing in His love toward His creation. That's of primary importance for us to understand. The Israelites here are called to honor those creatures with whom God has blessed with the breath of life, our fellow man. God saw fit to bless us as human beings with the breath of life. We're made in the image of God. As such, we should each honor each other for that. If for no other reason, for that. Just as God does. We are to cherish that life. We are to cherish that sexuality. We are to cherish that property. And we are to cherish each other's reputations just as God does. I'll put it out for consideration that every single one of those aspects is being threatened right now, today. Life, sexuality, property, reputation, they're all being threatened, are they not? This is an orchestrated effort to take down God's rule. It's nothing new. It's happened throughout human history. But it's an orchestrated effort to take down God's rule. For the first time in history, well, let's back up to here we are back at Sinai in the sandals of the Israelites here. For the first time in human history, it is now clear why human society cannot exist without ethics. This is finally clear to humans. It's because those ethics are rooted in the character of their Creator. in whose image we're made. Ethical integrity is an expression of a covenant relationship with God. If our ethics are based in our own self-interest, they cannot survive. And this is what sets the Ten Commandments apart from all other ancient law codes. There were a lot of different ancient law codes, some of them very good, but the Ten Commandments are set apart because they are based in the character of God. And we are to emulate that. We are ethical creatures because we love God and we are trying to emulate His character in our lives. Period.
That's the goal.
That is the goal. If we do not do that, we are denying our Creator. If we do not do that, we are denying our Creator. And that principle is what has governed Western civilization ever since this day at Sinai. I put it out for you last week that this event changed all human history. Now, in today's society, we're seeing a desire to please God as Creator disappear, and that's why the assault on all these things, that's why ethical behavior is also disappearing. If you were wondering why we're living in a post-ethical society, it's because we've decided not to recognize God as our Creator. That's why. That's the root of all the problems that we're facing. This is the root cause of societal decay in our day and age. You need to look no further than the Ten Commandments. This is kind of thought-provoking stuff we're working on here. It can be a little bit heady. You can spend a lot more time than I'm going to on it, too. Verse 12 is a direct transition from focus on God directly to a focus on our fellow man. See, the first four commandments called on us to recognize our total dependence on God. Each one of them was a call to recognize our total dependence on God, to place His honor above our own. We are giving up our rights to seek our own selfish interests. We have no more rights to seek our own selfish interests anymore. Now, verse 12, we are to honor our father and our mother. By honoring our parents, we are honoring those people to whom we are dependent for our earthly lives. You would not exist if it were not for your parents. To honor them shows that you recognize that you are not self-originating. You didn't bring yourself into the world. You owe at least that to your parents, right? We can't argue that. You're not self-originating, and without them, you never would have survived. Do you see the parallel to the commandments toward God Himself? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. You didn't come into this world without me. Honor me for that. Honor your parents because you didn't come into this world without them either. There's a parallel going on here. It's the next logical step, you see. Okay, it's one thing to think in high, lofty principles about how do we honor God and hold Him above all other gods. All right, let's bring it to a more practical level. Honor your parents for the same reason. And we're going to see a lot of people get bogged down in the next few chapters where it talks about, and if your neighbor's ass falls into a pit, what are you going to do about that? In those chapters, what he's doing is making, all right, here's practical illustrations for day-to-day life on how you do this. You want examples? Here you go, examples. And God's hammering it home. It gets kind of boring, it seems, as God makes example after example after example of how you do this in everyday life. But it all comes out of respecting God for who He is, as your provider, as your creator. See, this commandment to honor our parents isn't about whether or not our parents deserve honor. Your parents may be rotten. I don't know what your parents are like. Your parents might have been rotten individuals, but at least they brought you into this world and kept you alive long enough to be self-sustaining to some degree, right? At least for that, you should honor them. It's realizing that your life is not your own. It is, in fact, a gift from God first and from your parents secondly. Life is a gift. And that, by the way, is the significance of the promise attached to this command. This is the only one with a promise, too. It says that in Ephesians. This is the only one of the Ten Commandments with a promise. See, a society of self-centered people cannot survive. If your focus is on yourself and everybody else's focus is on themselves, you can't have a society. Society cannot exist without committed familial relationships. It cannot exist that without that. And that is why Satan is making such a strong assault on the integrity of the family today. Mark my words. Do you see that these ancient commandments are just as timeless today as they were in Moses' day? Just as timeless. I mean, a lot of people say, well, how come you got to get bogged down? Why? We don't have to look at the Ten Commandments today. They are timeless. They are the root of why society is collapsing worldwide today. Then the next commandments speak of how we're to treat our neighbors. All right? We took a step down. This is how we're to treat God. Now we take a step down. This is how you're to treat your parents. Within your family, this is how children should respond to their parents. Now we're going to see how do you respond to your neighbors, those people around you. And they involve recognizing that the world does not exist for us. That's key. And all mankind has value in the eyes of the Lord. Well, my neighbor's a rotten guy. He may be. He may be. But he is created in God's own image. And God doesn't want us to run down any of our fellow men. It's no coincidence that the first recorded sin after the fall was murder. You ever think about that? The first recorded sin after the fall was murder. You see, when we see ourselves as self-sustaining, then any form of violence is possible, isn't it? Okay, that mankind had the fall, and do you think sin just worked up gradually? Oh, there was this piddling sin, and this piddling sin, and it gradually worked up. No, the next one recorded was a murder, a man taking another man's life. That's about as drastic as it can be. Any form of violence is possible if we think ourselves to be self-sustaining. And with that mentality, if there's any competition for supplies, then the elimination of the competition is the only logical course of action. That was the problem between Cain and Abel. That's why we have wars, by the way. So what's the cure? Well, 1 John 3 tells us what the cure is. 1 John chapter 3. Beginning at verse 4. Whosoever committeth sin transgresseth against also the law, for sin is the transgression of the law. And you know that it was manifested to take away our sins, and in him is no sin. Whosoever abideth in him sinneth not. Whosoever sinneth hath not seen him, neither known him. Little children, let no man deceive you. He that doeth righteousness is righteous, even as he is righteous. He that committeth sin is of the devil, for the devil sinneth from the beginning. For this purpose the Son of God was manifested, that he might destroy the works of the devil. Whosoever is born of God doth not commit sin, for his seed remaineth in him, and he cannot sin, because he is born of God. In this the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil. Whosoever doeth not righteousness is not of God, neither he that loveth not his brother. For this is the message that ye heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Not as Cain, who was of that wicked one, and slew his brother. And wherefore slew he him? Because his own works were evil, and his brother's righteous. Comes right back to the beginning. Cain's problem was not that he didn't see Abel as a brother. It was that he saw him as a rival. He saw him as a rival. When we come in a covenant with God, we are to realize that other people are not our rivals. It's not me against him. They are people for who bear God's image and for whom God has great love. When we see other people as brothers and sisters, we are going to delight in being a part of the way God supplies their needs. Verse 14, we see that we're to value each other's marriage. We're to value each other's marriage. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Now, when you read the Hebrew, you can see that this is in the masculine. It's addressed to the man. And that could be because of in the Old Testament days, the man was often the only one with social status to initiate an adulterous relationship. But the issues are both the same for both men and women. And just like in the last commandment that we just looked at, the real issue is the surrender of our own needs and desires to the will of God. Sexual desires can affect the whole of our being, can't they? Both physically, spiritually, emotionally. And part of my theory on this, I'm going to give you a theory, this is just Dan speaking to you right now. This is a theory that I have on why this is. Because it allows us to be sharing in a part in God's creation of life. I admit that's just a theory of mine, and I could be way off, so don't put a whole lot of stock in it. But I've been studying it for a little while. Sexual sin, any sexual participation, is a participation in God's creative act. God created man in the first place. God designed sexual activity so that we can replicate that in some degree. And any corruption of that is a corruption of God's created order. And adultery happens, it's a sin against four people. Do you realize that? It's a sin against four people. It's a sin against yourself. It's a sin against the other person involved. It's a sin against their spouse. And it's a sin against your spouse. And it's a sin against God. Five people then. All right, I was speaking just on human relationships. This is why I need to respect him. See, it reaches a long way. That's the point I'm trying to make here. It reaches a long way. Sexual activity which destroys marriage is the antithesis of what God designed sexuality for. Verse 15 speaks of the sanctity of our neighbor's possessions. Thou shalt not steal. By the way, this one verse flies in the face of communism. There can be no such thing as biblical communism. Because here we are taught that there is genuinely a right to personal property. If it's your neighbor's, it's his. Don't steal it. And why is that? Why is that? Let's think for a minute. We'll think about the possession of personal property. How is personal property gained? How do you get what you've got? You pay for it, yep. Hard work, expenditure of effort. We expend some effort, we get some of these things. I don't have a lot of them, but I work, and I get one of these. They give me one of these. This is a token that says that I worked enough to earn this thing. And I can exchange this thing, or a whole lot of these things, for some other product. Goods, services, whatever it may be. Property is gained through the expenditure of effort, through the expenditure of intelligence. People may pay you for your ideas. Expenditure of energy. That's generally how I get money. I'm not that smart, so I got to work. And diligence. To take someone's property, then, in essence, is to steal those attributes from him. Do you see that? You're taking those attributes away from him. His diligence, his intelligence, his energy, his time. But because I have entrusted my needs to my covenant Lord, Because I trust my God, I don't need to manipulate others to get those needs supplied, do I? See, every single one of the Ten Commandments comes back to the provision of God. Do you trust God to provide? You don't need any other gods before me. You don't need any other gods before me. If you live by these principles, you are not going to be driven to steal. Just trust God. He'll provide what you need. You don't have to steal it. Verse 16, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. We see that not only our neighbor's life, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, my neighbor's sexuality, thou shalt not steal, I'm to honor my neighbor's property, but I'm also to honor his reputation here, you see. That's what this one's all about. I'm to honor his reputation. This one covenant commandment puts all the others into perspective. This commandment does not say, thou shalt not tell a lie. Because that could be manipulated into a self-serving one. What it does say is, do not tell lies about others. That's what it really says. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. And it reflects the concept that God is completely true and completely dependable. We might call it faithful. God wants us to be reliable, to be faithful, as He is reliable, as He is faithful. We are to be true to others, even at our own expense. Kind of like God was to us. We can do this because God will supply all our needs. We don't need to lie. We don't need to manipulate to provide for our own self-interest, don't you see? I keep saying it. Every single one of these commandments comes back to, do you trust God to provide for you? At essence, that's where they all come from. Do you trust God to provide? We see that more clearly, verse 17. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. We've come full circle now. The difference is that whereas the others were about wrong actions, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, those are all actions, this one is about wrong thinking. Wrong thinking. Now, this kind of wrong thinking, if you are coveting something, it could potentially bring about the wrong actions that we just finished looking at, couldn't it? If you're coveting your neighbor's wife, then you may end up committing the action of adultery. If you covet your neighbor's manservant, you may end up murdering to acquire it. If you covet your neighbor's house, you're going to end up stealing it from him, perhaps. This is the thought behind the actions. This thinking gets us off track of how our needs are supplied. We come back to the provision of God. You see, every one of the Ten Commandments is looking at how God will supply, will provide for all our needs. Does anybody believe that this morning? God will provide all of our needs. Covetousness itself is a belief that if a little is good, then more is even better. I think we'd be better off if we let God define what our needs are and allow Him to supply them. Do I supply my own needs ultimately? Do I supply my own needs? No. No, I really don't. I may think that I do, but I don't. Then I shouldn't be grasping for more than what God has seen fit to bless me with, should I? There's always somebody with more than me, isn't there? There's always somebody with more than you have. I could single out any one of you, and I guarantee you there's somebody in this world that's got more than you do. I guarantee it. I was just up at the L.L. Bean store. They're having a 60% off sale on menswear right now. That's where these britches came from. They're nice, aren't they? Jeremiah's got a pair just like them. You'd see them if he were here. While I was there, I was also looking at the St. Croix fly rods. And they had a nice 9.5-footer marked down to $850. I was looking at it. It was beautiful. I would have handled it, but they had it locked up. It was a beautiful fly rod. Now, there are people who have that fly rod. And does it work any better than my Martin, which cost me probably $100? It may work better. I don't know. God saw fit to bless me with a Martin. I don't have to have the St. Croix. I like to look at the St. Croix, though. There's always somebody with more. Even if I got everything that I thought I needed, I still wouldn't think I had enough, would I?
Right.
So
you'd have to give out 75 and say, I got too much stuff.
I look at that right now. I can't even move around in the barn. I'm tripping over stuff. Yeah, exactly. But to make it even more...
Your eyes are never fulfilled.
You're right. You're absolutely right, Bruce. That's a very pithy way to put it. Now, God says something else in Ephesians and in Colossians. He repeats this, and I'm going to summarize kind of with this thought. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 5, see what God has to say about covetousness. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 3. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as becometh saints. And then let's move over to Colossians, chapter 3, and verse 5. It says, mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry. To be dominated by the desire to possess and to make that your focus in life is to make material gain your ultimate end, which is to put another god before Yahweh. So we've come right back to the first commandment, haven't we? Covetousness is having another god before him. Do you see the heart of the Ten Commandments now? I hope you do. You could study this all of your life and never get it. The heart of the Ten Commandments is that they are a revelation of God's nature and of life as He intends us to live it. He wants us to commit ourselves to Him and to value other people as He does. When we treat Himself and our fellow men properly, we are now fit to be a kingdom of priests and an holy nation. That's the terms of the covenant. That's all there is. Those are the terms of the covenant. Live as God would intend us to live and trust Him to supply all your need.